Holy crap, guys. We're back. We are back. It's been a year. It has been a year. Frank,
we took
it
some
is
time
literally...
off. You know, got a little busy, Daniel. Got a little busy.
So, I am so sorry for all our dedicated Drop a Deuce podcast listeners, but ever
Listen,
since...
we were the number one Nick Kyrgios podcast in the world, and just like our hero who took the year off, we took the year off. We can't be Nick Kyrgios podcast when there's no Nick Kyrgios.
You could say we socially distanced.
Yeah, exactly.
We were quarantined, but we ended up innovating, finding new ways to be better. And Frank, we made a lot of changes.
We have, Daniel. You want to tell everyone what we've done?
Yeah. So, and instead of being just a Nick Kyrgios podcast, we have evolved into other sports. So what we're doing so far is we're going to still keep our tennis core. So we're still going to preview and talk about big tennis news. So Australian Open, Wimbledon, French Open, US Open, all the big stuff. And, you know, other tidbits and news that happens. But in the tennis world, we realized that there's not too much going on. And if we wanted to connect with more Drop a Deuce listeners, we would have, you know, increase our sports coverage. So we are going to be talking about college football. We're going to be talking about college basketball, NFL. NFL playoffs are huge right now. The NBA is coming up.
Yeah, once the NBA gets in, we'll get into the NBA. Once the MLB starts, we'll talk a little MLB. And, of course, I mean, we have my favorite thing right now. We got the college football playoff coming up in a few short weeks.
Who's your dark horse for the college football playoff?
My dark horse for the college football playoff? Cincinnati.
Cincinnati, that's interesting.
We'll talk about more in our college football section. Are we just hopping college football right now if you want?
You know what? Let's get into that right now.
So here's the thing. I think there's a couple reasons why I think Cincinnati's going to make it. It's because these top four are going to end up beating each other alive. You got Clemson and Notre Dame in the ACC championship. Notre Dame wins. Clemson is out. You got Florida, A&M, and Alabama. They're going to have to play – two of them have to play each other in the SEC championship. And I don't think you're going to get it if one of them – and Alabama's going to win. So that's going to knock the other two out of contention because they're not going to let a one-loss Florida or two one-loss A&M in or two-loss team in. So that opens the door for Cincinnati, especially if Ohio State gets DQ'd from the Big Ten championship game, which is very likely to happen because Michigan just doesn't want to play them.
I mean, that also kind of leaves the door open for our alma mater, Indiana.
It does, but I think the problem is going to be for Indiana that we have such great wins that just look terrible now. Michigan, horrible. Penn State, horrible. This is the best football season IU's had in our lifetime, and the problem is the teams we beat can't win a game.
I think my biggest thing about college football is that college football is, especially like the early season rankings, are all based off of popularity. It's a popularity contest.
Yeah.
It's all about how big your brand is. So it's Michigan who's known for being a perennial 10-2 team. It's Penn State who's known for basically, again, being a perennial 10-2 team, maybe making the Rose Bowl.
But
only
I mean, this year is the exception for Penn State for how bad they actually are. They were top 10 team when we started the year. They are 2-5 in Big Ten play. That's absurd.
Ugly.
I mean,
that
again, we know as IU, that was a controversial call to beat them in the 2-point conversion.
He got in.
My point of view is he got in.
He took
but
the
also,
virginity.
If they ruled him out originally and then reviewed it and still ruled him out, I would have understood. That call was going with whatever the call on the field originally was. They were never overturning it.
Oh, absolutely. They don't overturn calls unless it's blatantly obvious. Like, I think the funniest thing is, I think I have so many issues with just college football and mainly just football commentators in general, whether it's NFL or college football.
Oh, they're horrible. They're horrible.
They're literally talking heads. Same thing. So all the college game day people, so Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollack, so on and so forth. They only talk about brands. They only talk about how great this team was in the past, how Kirk Herbstreit played for Ohio State in the past. They refuse to admit that good teams this year are good teams because they weren't good in the past. Same thing with
Northwestern.
I
agree 100%. I mean, let's talk about the two dark horses in the Big Ten. You have IU and Northwestern, who aren't named by any means. IU's about to be a top 10 team in the country. Easy.
They are. They are. They're unanimous. Unanimous coaches and AP.
Yeah, but I mean, let's be real here. Once the playoff poll comes out, those two don't mean anything anymore.
Well, yeah.
But here's the thing. 4 out of 5 people on the panel picked Wisconsin to beat them. More of a majority on the panel picked them to lose to Michigan, to Penn State, obviously to Ohio State as well. We know what happened.
Yeah.
They picked them to lose every game. It's the same thing with Northwestern. Because these teams aren't names, they expect them to lose. IU quarterbacks are dominating the Big Ten this year. Payne Ramsey, IU backup, turned starter last year when Penix went out. He's having another fantastic year. Because these kids didn't go to Alabama and transfer or go to Ohio State and transfer, they just don't care about them.
Well, I think the funniest thing I can add on to that is Tate Martell. So Tate Martell went to my high school. He's a very interesting and unique fellow. He ended up – so he committed to Texas A&M when he was a junior, decommitted, and then ended up going to Ohio State, and he was behind – Haskins and Justin Fields when he came in, so he obviously transferred. But everybody, because they get recruited by these high power programs, they expect them to be so good. And then I think Martell was a third string at Ohio State, and then also again at Miami. He might be transferring again. But my point is you see all of these huge conferences, and the main thing is. It's a popularity contest because those teams have the biggest stadiums.
But it boils down to more than that. Even recruiting, it's a big popularity contest.
If they have a budget and you have a brand, it's easy to get big players.
Yeah. So you know who Chris Olave is, right? One of the best receivers in college football.
Yeah,
right
he was now. he was catching touchdowns for current IU quarterback Jake Tuttle in high school.
Well,
Jack Tuttle.
Do you know the recruiting story of how Olave ended up at Ohio State?
What happened?
I heard this on the NAT broadcast on Saturday, actually. So these two went to a high school in San Marcos, California called Mission Hills. It's about 15 minutes away from where I am right now, by the way. High school. Those two were there, they were always in the top division for playoffs and they always made a deep run. But the story is, so Day went down there to watch Tuttle throw. And he was talking to the coach.
Tuttle,
like,
not Olave, or both?
No. So he's watching Tuttle throw, and then Olave just happened to be his receiver. So he goes and talks to the coach. He goes, "Who the hell is this receiver?" And the guy's like, "Oh, his name's Chris Olave. He just moved here, so he can't play this season. So nobody knows about him." Day's like, "I need this kid," and went down and gave him a scholarship. Sight unseen in games.
And wait, did Tuttle get a scholarship too?
No, Tuttle did not get an offer from Ohio State.
But Tuttle got an offer from Alabama and USC.
And LSU, and among other teams. Tuttle was a very highly recruited player.
He was four-star Elite 11.
Yeah. He was getting recruited by Ohio State because they always have a quarterback backup.
The funniest thing about Ohio State is what, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you go first. I was going to move on to a different college football topic.
I think my funniest fact about Ohio State is that even though they're always so good, it's not their quarterback leading them, except for this year. Like, Justin Fields is amazing. He's going to be a fantastic NFL quarterback, except unless he plays IU. Like, but the thing about Ohio State is that they haven't had a first round quarterback draft pick in forever. They're not a quarterback school. They're known as getting great quarterback recruits, but not developing them.
Exactly.
Unlike LSU or like most of the SEC schools who literally develop quarterbacks left and right. And then,
well, you know who I think is the best quarterback developer in college football right now?
Who?
Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma.
Oh yeah. Obviously that's not a hot take.
No doubter. But I mean,
that's not a hot take.
No one talks about him because it's not an SEC school. If you're looking at quarterbacks, you think SEC first. You're like, "Oh yeah, by the way, this guy's over here is doing something too."
Well, people only care about the SEC because ESPN runs it. Like, well, ESPN runs the SEC, or SEC runs ESPN. It goes either way. Like, it's like even in the Pac-12, you have Keaton Slovis for USC. You have in the Big 12, you everyone used to hear about the Texas quarterback. I'm blanking on his name.
Oh, I I know who you're talking about. He's a senior who's been there for like 30 years.
He's been there for 30. Whatever. I can't remember.
The research department, aka me, is going to go look up who he is.
Yeah. If you guys have it, this is your first time listening to us. We have a research department, which means either one of us has a computer in front of us at all times, and one of us stalls, and the other one.
All right. I got his name. It's Sam Ellinger.
See, one of my best friends goes to Texas. She doesn't follow football, but she'll be mad at me for not knowing that. Sam Ellinger is also like the definition of a system quarterback, but I'm not going to get into that right now.
Well, this is actually a good that's a good transitioning though, because that gets me to what I really want to talk about in college football. First of all, unappreciated quarterbacks, Zach Wilson at BYU, unappreciated. BYU
sucks.
And was my next topic. I am so happy I don't have to hear about, why isn't BYU top 10? Why isn't BYU in the playoff? They are garbage. The first time they played a team with any talent, they lost.
Are you saying that Coastal Carolina has talent?
Well, compared to who,
kind of a flex. Compared to who? Anybody else?
Compared to who BYU plays? I'm sorry. Troy, Louisiana Tech, UTSA, Texas State, and Western Kentucky.
Okay, well, yeah, like Northern Alabama. Alabama's not really known as the powerhouse of like the
BYU
South.
Has played two teams with talent this year. Boise State
and Coastal Carolina.
But Boise State lost like 19 people to COVID before that game. They were on like their fifth string quarterback.
That is true.
I thought I was going to have to go play for them.
Honestly, BYU might have done well. You did pretty well in intramural.
Oh, no, we're not talking intramurals. That is too hot of a topic for me.
We'll get to it someday. We'll get to it someday.
College football, the exciting stories are your underdog teams who aren't usually talented being talented, and that's IU Northwestern this year. Typical year for COVID.
So I grew up a Northwestern fan. You know that. Yeah.
I grew up not liking college football because my take was always – I want to root for the school I go to. So here's actually a funny story. Sorry to go on a side tangent here. My friends were Stanford and Oregon fans growing up. So they used to argue all the time by quoting, we won more championships. No, we did. And they're like in the 1800s when these people weren't even knowing
like
what football
Princeton.
Is.
They sound like Princeton.
So to troll these kids and piss them off, I decided to become a North Dakota State fan because they won like 19 national titles in a row. Carson Wentz, Trey Lance. Those are my boys. So, yeah. Sorry, that was my side tangent.
Well, okay. My main thing is Northwestern was horrible back to, like, 2005. And then 2005 on, they're insane. They've won two of the last three Big Ten West championships. Obviously, and it's hard in the Big Ten. And you and I know most about the Big Ten because we follow it nonstop. I just think history – you can't trust history in college football, even –
If you look at the Big Ten and you go off history, the East is just much better than the West off history. I mean, the East has Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State, and Michigan State. And this year, three of those four suck. So you can't just use history to determine if a team's good or not.
Exactly. It's so tough. I guess the Big Ten West has Iowa, Wisconsin, Nebraska, who are, again, three historically – awesome programs. Then you have Minnesota,
but
Purdue,
to be
Northwestern,
fair, but Nebraska hasn't been good since they joined the Big Ten.
They made it to the first Big Ten championship game.
And then they've been near the bottom every year.
So 2013 on.
I'm a Scott Frost guy. Don't get me wrong. I'm a Scott Frost guy. I like Scott Frost, but he's done a horrible job here.
How so?
The team just hasn't been good again. They're 2-4. Last year they were below 500. He's just not doing what he did at UCF, which is find ways to win. Like, again, let's look at this. Losing to Lovie Smith in Illinois by 18? No. No.
Well, Mackenzie Milton, the former UCF quarterback, is transferring.
Frost makes a play for him.
I think Mackenzie Milton threw for 5,000 yards plus with Scott Frost, a quarterback, and then broke his leg with the other guy. So I think there's only one place he goes.
It's like in a Kyle. It's like what's his name? The Florida quarterback. It's Kyle Frask.
Kyle Trask.
Trask. Thank you. Was awesome. It was close. Kyle Trask and Felipe Franks. Felipe Franks was a starter. Kyle Trask was his backup.
Felipe Franks is balling out.
Yeah, well, that's the comparison I was going to get to. I think it's going to be a very similar situation where it's not like he isn't good. He just got someone better came in as the backup, and now Felipe Franks is doing great. Hell, you could say the same thing about Peyton Ramsey and Michael Penix before he tore his ACL.
And then
Peyton Ramsey's a good quarterback in college. Penix is just better for that system.
I think Penix is done after this year. He could return and he could return healthier than ever. But if I was head coach Tom Allen, I wouldn't trust him. I simply would not trust Michael Penix. In 3 years from being a college quarterback, he has had three season-ending injuries, and that is not okay. For his redshirt freshman year.
Here's the bigger problem, in my opinion. It's not just three injuries. It's two torn ACLs on the same leg. That's the bigger problem for me.
Because every time it gets injured, it gets easier to re-aggravate. That's just simple medication.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Penix. I love a little lefty. I love a little lefty arm. But yeah,
Southpaw.
All right, you want to talk a little on college basketball or NFL next?
I think we're gonna do an ad real quick, and then we will.
Of course.
We have to add. We love our anchor ad. Our anchor ad is the best part about this podcast.
It's the only reason people listen to hear the ad.
Honestly, I hear my voice in that is very seductive. I don't know where.
All right, and on that note, let's play our ad. Daniel, now, do you want to talk a little NFL or a little NCAA basketball right now? Because both have some good topics. We just currently have a Monday Night Football game on as we're recording this.
Yeah, so we are recording this on a Monday night. So with the NFL going on right now, I think we talk about college basketball a little bit. We let the NFL develop a little bit.
I agree. We'll let this Bills 49ers game play out. So I think the big topic right now in the NCAA is going to be COVID. COVID is destroyed. I've seen more games destroyed in this than any other sport. I mean, if you talk about it on Saturday, we had a marquee matchup. The number one and number two team in the country in the men's side, Gonzaga and Baylor, scheduled a matchup, canceled. Gonzaga has COVID. They're gone for 2 weeks.
Well, same thing. Two things in the – so this podcast is going to be coming out Tuesday, December 8th at about noon Eastern time. And before that, that day, two games in the Big Ten ACC Challenge, one of the most premier basketball – almost tournaments or showdowns, whatever you want to call it.
Whatever term you want to use.
Two games in that have been canceled. So Michigan's game.
Who got canceled? I have not seen that, actually.
So, yeah, it was Louisville and Wisconsin and Michigan and whoever they play.
Those are games for Wednesday, according to my stats department.
Well, yeah, like the
even more crazy.
It was,
I thought you were saying their games for tomorrow.
No. It's just in the next two days.
Well, because tomorrow there's some pretty good matchups for that too, which is I hope those games happen.
I mean, I assume they will. I'm not positive. I know we have Duke and Illinois, which is going to be a really, really good game.
And then you have Iowa, number three in the country, going against North Carolina, number 16.
I think North Carolina is overrated. I think North Carolina
I know. Here's the thing. I agree
overrated.
With that. I don't think these North Carolina teams are as good as they used to be. I never count out a coach like Roy Williams, though. A good coach can take you a long time.
We'll get into
that take in my NFL coverage more, too, because I have a long rant for that.
All righty. But I think the same thing we were talking about before is that brands in college basketball go a long way in determining preseason rankings as well. Same thing we saw with Kentucky, who is now 1-2 in their non-conference play. Like that is, they lost to Georgia Tech by 17, and then they lost to
Richmond
by at least 10. I know that. And both of those games were at home, I believe. Or maybe Georgia Tech was in the bubble.
I'm going to look where Richmond was. I thought it was in a tournament.
I think Georgia Tech was in the tournament. I know Richmond was at home. I know they
Richmond
lost.
So Richmond was in something called the Blue Case Showdown, Bluegrass Showdown. Sorry, which is like
so
the,
that, that,
it's like
that,
a Kentucky
that,
thing. Yeah,
that's but, in Kentucky.
Yeah, it's kind of like though how we have the Crossroads Showdown in Indianapolis. I think it's just that.
I think it's Kentucky just inviting random teams they know they'll beat, knock on wood, to Rupp Arena and hoping that they just get some practice in. Just paying for their hotel rooms and going right ahead.
Well, you know what here's the craziest part. BCC Big Ten Challenge is one of the most marketable college basketball events of the year because those are supposed to be two of the best conferences.
Same thing with the Gavitt Games with Big Ten and Big East.
Yeah, here's what I was about to get into, the Big East, the next one. So you have your Big East, Big 12 battle tomorrow. There's a fantastic game that I think is getting very much screwed over by being in a 2 p.m. slot because of the ACC Big Ten Challenge.
What is it?
Top 10 Kansas versus top 10 Creighton.
Oh, that's going to be a blowout. That is going to be a blowout.
You don't watch enough Kansas basketball if you think that's going to be a blowout. This team isn't blowing anybody.
Kansas is good. I mean, Kansas lost to they were completely overmatched against Gonzaga. I watched that game. Gonzaga just throws the ball to the paint.
You can't do anything. How slow they started off against Kentucky, and they barely won. How slow they started off against North Dakota State, and they barely won. This team can go through slumps pretty easily, which is why I think, even though I like Kansas a lot this year, I think it'll be a very good game. Because Creighton always has these sneaky shooters who will dominate.
Doug McDermott.
Yeah. Well, again, I know it's against bad talent, Omaha and Kennesaw State. They scored over 90 points the last two games. I don't care who you're playing. If you're dropping 90, that's impressive.
Okay, you can say that, but then I can make a counter-argument saying Northwestern scored 111 against Chicago State, yeah. and then they scored 90, I think that's very impressive. And then 92 against University of Arkansas Pine Bluff. Those are two shitty teams. Of course, they're obviously going to score a ton of points because you have these two-star scrubs who are happy enough to get a scholarship. That's not scrubs against that's not like a bash against Division I teams. If you're a Division I basketball player, congratulations. You are better than my scrawny 5'11 self. But it's just a different breed being, I think, like we talk about in the FBS of basketball in the Big Six, where you are developed and it's the three, the four stars, the guys with the natural talent, they go and they play and they absolutely ball out. Once you start playing against those big boys, once you start playing against those Big Six guys, regardless of potential upset, wow, I can't talk, fantastic, love it. You just start to see better competition and you start to score less. That's why
here's the point I'm making that. Like, if you look at the Omaha game, which obviously could be a fluke, they shot 50% from three. I don't care if you're playing third graders as a college.
If you're wide open,
50% from three, that's impressive.
If you're wide open though, like if you run a competent offense, you can shoot 50% from three. I'm sure these guys are shooting 60-70% from three in practice. If you're just getting shots up, it all depends how many threes you shoot. Like, I have the Northwestern stats on me right now. Let me get it.
But here's the thing. I'm actually looking at Creighton stats too, so I'll tell you exactly. Their free throw percentage, 83% for the year. That's incredible.
That's actually impressive.
They're shooting, I'm going to round up because it's 51.9, but that's their field goal percentage. They're shooting 32.9 from three. Those are good numbers. This team can shoot, and that's where I think it could cause, I know it's early, but that's where it could cause a problem.
Okay, yes, but you score all these points, and Northwestern, again, I have their stats up right now. I'm just going to say it. Northwestern shot 24 threes against Chicago State. First off, Chicago's not a state. That is my big hot take of the day. Chicago is a city. It should be the Chicago City.
I've never
city
heard a take career. So hot before.
Again, Chicago's not a state, even though they have 70% of the population of Illinois. Big whoop. Woohoo. I don't care. But again, they shot 24 threes against Chicago State, and no team should be shooting 24 threes in a game. Like, that is immature. That's uncalled for. That's very Gen Z. If you need to be able to get it back into the post, that's where you get your a stats term. It's like expected value. That's where we're going to throughout a regression model, no matter however how like fucking variant the entire model is, like you would want to get it to the big guy. That's where you're going to get the most points regardless.
But again,
that's what's going to happen. And
if you're shooting that good over three games, even against bad teams, it's a very good performance. Like here, I'm going to pull up some stats from our alma mater because they couldn't hit. They can't shoot for shit. They could not shoot at all.
Indiana was shooting like 10% in the Maui Classic.
Yeah, we're going to put up against Tennessee Tech, a bad team. So our field goal night percentage in that game was 56 from the floor, 26 from three, and 45.5 from the free throw line. Free throw.
That's bad.
Yeah.
That is bad.
But again, and then on for the year, we're 68 from the line, 46 from the floor, and 29.3 from three. So as you can see, we had a bad game against a bad team, and of course we can't shoot. Just because you're playing bad teams doesn't mean you don't have shooters. Do I think Creighton's a top 10 team in the league? No. Do I think they can put up a fight against Kansas because Kansas goes through slumps and they can shoot? Yes.
Is it in Lawrence? It's not like it matters anymore. It's literally
there's no fans, but yeah, it's in Lawrence.
Okay, well, I think they're going to probably win by like five.
That's not a blow.
It can be competitive, but basically what I see now is almost every single game is going to be a tournament game. Literally every single game is going to be a neutral site, no matter where you play. It's going to be neutral site. There's going to be no competitive advantage other than the fact that one team might be a little bit more comfortable at the start of a game on a floor than the other team, but you still get practice sessions. You still get used to, I think one of the most important things is, as we saw in the NBA playoffs, depth perception going back. So when you're shooting a three, you're shooting a free throw, depth perception about how far the wall is behind the basket is really important. And then also the height of the ceiling. So,
well, that's I think in a team like an Indiana or a Butler or Notre Dame or Purdue, any Indiana team, could be a serious threat to make a deep run in March Madness because they're going to play all in Indian, because they're talking about playing only in Indianapolis. Those guys play in Indianapolis every year. They know the court better than any of these kids coming in from like a Baylor who have never played on that court before. So they have to adapt to it. Like you're just saying.
True and false. True. They know Bankers Life Fieldhouse, which is where the Pacers play. And where they are playing a lot of the big Champions Classics games. So the Illinois-Baylor game was there this year. The Gonzaga-West Virginia game was there this year. But,
we play a game there every year. and we're playing Butler there in 2 weeks, about? A little less than?
But my point is, before you rudely interrupted me.
I'm sorry.
It's the fact that the NCAA tournament is going to be held at multiple sites. It's going to be held at high schools around the city of Indianapolis. It's going to be held at the smaller colleges. So like Marion, UIndy, IUPUI, three of the lower end D1, high D2 schools, like they all have arenas. These kids are used to playing in arenas versus like a convention center. They haven't played in a convention center since AAU ball.
No, I agree with that.
It's going to be the same thing. It doesn't matter what state you play in. You have to be comfortable on the court you're on. And even that's a minute advantage. There's not going to be any home court, anything. It's going to be purely the ball in the basket.
But a player I like to use for talks like this is because every court's different is Gordon Hayward. Was it Hayward who blew up his leg during the USA game? It was George, right?
It was Paul George who broke it in Vegas. Yeah.
Yes, during the USA game. Paul George has done that dunk and that shot thousands of times. But that court was just a little bit different, so he misjudged it. And I feel like the hoop was too close. If I'm remembering this play correctly, I feel like the hoop was super close to the baseline compared to the NBA.
No, the hoop's always the same, I believe. Yeah, it was the whatever the back of the hoop is called, like the stem of the hoop.
That's what I'm talking about. Like there was something different about this hoop that made that he didn't see because he'd never played it before. And that's a small, minute advantage. But I mean, even again, one game a year at a something like On Fieldhouse is a big advantage for knowing those minute things.
That is true. But speaking of minute things, football, NFL football. I know. Yes. What a wild transition. I mean,
I'm very curious where we're going with this.
I mean, just minute things. Speaking of minute things, the small man Baker Mayfield, is he now a MVP candidate?
No, not even remotely close.
You sure? He threw for 4 touchdowns in the first half. He would have, if his coach wouldn't have stopped him, he could have thrown for 10.
I agree with you again. I just think that someone like Rodgers or Mahomes is having a better all around year. So you remember, Mayfield has turned on very late in the season. We were having the same talks about Baker Mayfield's overrated. Baker Mayfield sucks for the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season. He's turning on late, but it's too little too late.
Now, my thing about Baker Mayfield is I believe the injury of Odell Beckham Jr. helped him.
Helped him, I agree. And I think that's going to cause a big problem in the offseason.
I think he's gone. I think he's gone. I don't know where Baker – I think Baker – Baker's going to stay in Cleveland for a little bit. I think you grow with a guy so much, you can't necessarily get rid of him. I mean, I can't say that unlike the Eagles, who are going to probably go to Jalen Hurts now. But if we're talking specifically about the Browns are 9-3, even though they have the easiest schedule in the league, not even close. They've won 4.
Are
of
you
their...
sure about that? I think the Steelers might have a competition.
Oh, whatever. The AFC East just gets the easiest schedules in the league, no matter what.
Oh, no. Hey. The Patriots actually had one of the preseason ranking and striking schedule. My Patriots actually had one of the hardest schedules of the year, which I was ecstatic about. That one, the tank for Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. But this dipshit Cam Newton, who can't throw a football to save his life, has to run in 3 touchdowns a game, that little asshole.
That's very aggressive for a guy I have on my fantasy team.
I am very passionate about my hatred of Cam Newton because he cannot throw a football to save his life, and I'm sick and tired of everyone praising him.
And they might resign him. They're probably resigning him.
No, they're definitely not resigning him.
I think you resign him for maybe like one more $1 million contract deal.
He's going to want – the problem is I think Cam's getting very cocky and he's going to want a lot of money. Because he's having a good year on the ground and winning games, but again, if
he's
you
6-6. That's not winning games. Not in the Patriots organization.
With this Patriots, well, first of all, in this team, yeah, it is. When Hightower opts out, when your second best cornerback opts out, when you have so many defensive players opt out from your one of the best defenses in the league the last couple of years, it's impressive. But here's the problem. Here's the problem, Cam Newton. He is not throwing the ball at all. He can't throw the ball in the red zone, and he can't throw the ball confidently. We have a fucking backup quarterback who's almost matched his touchdown total, and we have wide receivers throwing touchdowns because Bill Belichick doesn't think he can throw the ball.
You got to do what you got to do, though. I mean, just get it. So what? What did he throw for? How many? He ran for 2 touchdowns last.
I mean,
week,
this
right?
This Sunday, you kind of have to take the grain of salt because he had 2 special teams touchdowns, so it was a blowout. So he didn't really get on the field a lot. But I mean, he only threw 19 passes on Sunday. He didn't.
He didn't throw for
70 yards.
He threw for 69.
He didn't play much.
Nice.
He didn't
69.
Really okay, Daniel. I'm trying not to make that joke. But okay.
69.
Let's take a team like the Texans, who don't have a good defense. He had a great game. You know, he threw for 365 and 1 touchdown. That's good.
69.
But if you look at the Jets. Oh my. All right. And on that talk, the Japanese podcast is never coming back.
Oh, the Japanese podcast is going to be. Also, if you guys didn't know, this is a little side note. The Japanese podcast will be every Tuesday and Friday from now on, which is kind of big.
Twice a week.
We're going to be here twice a week, guys. So if you guys want to listen to us rant about stupid sports stuff and maybe
like
some
me
light
getting
things.
Pissed off at Cam Newton.
Exactly. I mean, if you want to hear 2 college kids, or I guess we're going to be graduating from college here pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, I got a week left.
Yeah, he has a week left. Guys, we're going to be talking about random sports stuff pretty here, pretty soon. So,
all right, can I just talk about the elephant in the room though with the NFL?
Please.
That the Jets definitely were trying to lose that game on Sunday.
Well, the issue is, I don't believe that's true because they fired Greg Williams, their defensive coordinator, that day.
They fired Williams. They were going to fire Williams anyways. He sucked this year.
Well, I mean, yeah, you suck, but you can't. For me, I have a pet peeve against the absolute protection coverage where you have the three guys back in the end zone. You just try to make them throw it short, but with 12 seconds left and you know that they need a touchdown to win, why don't you have Crowder and a couple wide receivers, a couple defensive backs, a couple safeties in the end zone? Just make sure they don't score. Leave it in the middle of the field. They have zero timeouts.
I thought they purposely threw the game against the Patriots too, to be honest with you. If you watch the last two offensive possessions that game, Joe Flacco over pursuing receiver by like 50 yards. Like, it wasn't even remotely close, so we could say it was just a bad throw.
Joe Flacco has the biggest arm in the league, though.
Well, yeah.
Other than Patrick Mahomes.
If you look at their last possession in the game, in a 27-27 ball game, pass, pass, pass. Who just does that when you're trying to kill clock and not give it back to the Patriots? No.
Who said that? I think they were trying to win, and they didn't realize that their running game was that good.
They were all short passes. The first one, I mean, I watched this game live. The first one they completed, it was a 3-yard pass short up the middle. The second play, he got sacked because he didn't throw the ball away trying to pass in. The third one, he tried to go deep and then just tried to throw it away again. They weren't trying to do anything there. And then again, Greg Williams didn't just decide for the first time since, I think ESPN said 2005 or 2006, to play no man coverage on a Hail Mary. Somebody told him to do it, and he's just being a sacrificial lamb because he was going to be fired anyways.
The highlight of that entire day of NFL, so like yesterday, of week 13, was the CBS guy. I forget who it was. It was one of like the old white guys. So yes, like the entire
so
the entire
every
thing.
Announcer ever,
other than Greg Gumbel, who's the old black guy, but. but yeah, he first thing once that game came off the air, one of the commentators, like the talking heads, started yelling at the Jets. He's like they actually threw that game. And I think it's so interesting because I think it was a former coach. I'm gonna have to look up who his name is, but it's so interesting that he was unreserved in his comments and actually just completely destroyed the Jets. Like, the Jets are trying to go 0-16. The thing is, the Jets don't need a quarterback. The Jets need coaches. The Jets
no,
have
the,
Sam Darnold.
No, the Jets need a quarterback. The Jets need a quarterback.
The Jets have a – I mean, in my defense, I think they have two very decent quarterbacks. They don't have great quarterbacks. But my issue with the Jets is you need coaches to be able to develop the quarterbacks. You can't have Sam Darnold, who was a very, very good quarterback in college, for 3 years absolutely thrived at USC. And then he comes in, he throws – remember, he graduated coming off of an absolutely basically perfect game in the Rose Bowl against Penn State. You have him coming in as the starting quarterback. You need someone who to develop it. You need to make sure that he knows that it's not the that the NFL isn't college, that you are playing against 10 times better defensive linebackers, safeties, DNs, everything. You need – coaches to be able to develop quarterbacks. That's the same thing with the Browns that we saw before.
I mean,
nobody,
I agree.
I'm not done. The Browns did not develop Baker Mayfield the way they should have until Kevin Stefanski came in, until their head coach came in. It's the same thing. If you have – and they brought in Joe Flacco. They literally brought in Joe Flacco basically trying to develop their quarterback. You have quarterbacks coach. You have awesome offensive coordinators. You have a head coach. All of them are going to be gone. If you can't get a 24-year-old to get out of his own way and play football and basically just complete passes, even if they're to lower-end wide receivers, why do you have a football team? Why would you ever expect it? You need coaches to come in and develop quarterbacks, or else we're going to see an absolute gem of a quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, come in and absolutely stink up the league. It doesn't matter
what pick
you have. Whatever, if you don't, if you have coaches to develop your players, same thing that we've seen with Justin Herbert. He's coming in. He's come into a shitty situation. He's 3-9, or the Chargers are 3-9, but he has a coach who cares about him. If you have a coach who cares about the team versus just himself, who's not selfish and will actually take time out of his day to develop him, help him understand life might be bad at first, but overall it'll get better. And you just have to put the time in and put the effort in and realize that the world is a little bit different than your college girls and your booze, then you can actually have an NFL team. It's annoying.
I agree with that. Now, here's the thing. I got a couple of takes. So, first of all, the Chargers are the low-budget Falcons. They're just as good at blowing leads as the Falcons are. They blow leads all the time. They just didn't do it in a Super Bowl like the Falcons did, so it's not talked about as much. They almost try to lose instead of trying to win. Now, here's my – I have this take all year, which is kind of no longer contention because everyone – they've won a couple games and everyone else is so bad. So Houston's first-round pick goes to Miami this year. And there was a time and it looked like they might have a shot at the number one pick. Now they don't. My take was, doesn't matter who you are, who's number one, you're taking Trevor Lawrence number one. Trevor Lawrence is a once-in-a-generation talent. He is – So good.
Okay, yes, obviously.
So in this scenario, I'm saying that even if you're the Dolphins with Tua, you're taking Lawrence. I don't care who you have as your quarterback. If you have the number one pick this year, you're taking Lawrence because of either A, the trade value, or B, because, well, he's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league in a couple of years. Unless he's on the Jets.
You're right up to an extent. I believe the best point you made in that was trade value. I think if the Jets have the number one pick, you trade the crap out of Trevor Lawrence. You take who needs a quarterback? Potentially the 49ers do. Potentially
the Patriots,
the Jaguars.
The Jaguars need a quarterback.
The Giants might.
The Broncos might.
I hear a lot of the Broncos are losing faith in Drew Lock.
The entire NFC East needs a quarterback. I think Dak's gonna walk from the. I think Dak's gonna walk from the Cowboys.
I don't think the Eagles need a quarterback. I do think Trevor Lawrence to Dallas would be the best fit. I believe that because Jerry Jones is a caring GM. He has Mike McCarthy, who's a great offensive coordinator.
Can we talk unrealistic situations? Because I think if we want to talk an unrealistic situation, you put Trevor Lawrence in Seattle, that would be a lot of fun to watch.
Can I talk about another unrealistic situation? Yes. Trevor Lawrence to Chicago.
I mean, yeah, I agree. That would be fun, but just because you have Allen Robinson. But, I mean, it's more – I just think a team like Seattle where you have DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett would be fun
to see. You're talking about getting rid of an MVP candidate, candidate.
I'm more of talking about putting him on a team – with two really good wide receivers in this hypothetical, just to watch him throw 90 yards in the air every play and actually complete it.
I mean, there would be no net benefit there.
Well, no, I think obviously it's never going to happen. This is just more of a fun situation of what it would be cool to see it. Just because, again, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are an incredible duo. They're going to be good. They're never going to get rid of Russell Wilson. Should be fun to see Trevor Lawrence with his arm strength put up them.
You gotta assume one way or the other that the Jaguars are taking a quarterback. They have nobody. I can't believe they took.
Don't diss my man Gardner Minshew like that.
Gardner Minshew is a career backup quarterback, and we all know
Give me Gardner Minshew as the Patriots starter. We're going to the Super Bowl. It's Gardner time.
Oh my god!
I love Gardner Minshew. I just love Gardner Minshew, and I will not take him to slander of his amazing talent.
I don't think Gardner Minshew is that fantastic. I think he's not as consistent as I would want to be, and that's why I believe the Jaguars should trade up. Because I think
trade
the Jets
up, they're
have
gonna
better
have the,
quarterbacks.
They're gonna have the number. I'm the Jaguars. I'm not
from
trading
two to
up.
Pick.
Because the thing is, you're going to have to give up so much.
Well, you have Justin
much.
Fields, too.
Yeah, you're going to have to give up so much to move up from 2-1. It's not worth it. Just take Fields, and you'll still have a great quarterback. It's not going to be worth the 5 first-round picks the Jets are going to ask for to move up.
True, because I think that the Jets, as we saw a couple of days ago, the Jets need defense, and they need coaches more than – or wide receivers. Fuck, the Jets need offensive linemen.
The Jets need an entire roster – but I think it's just they're not going to pass up on Trevor Lawrence.
The Jets need everything except a quarterback.
I think they need a quarterback. I don't think Darnold's that good. You remember, he's someone who's still an idiot college kid. He got mono last year. He had the comments last year where he goes, oh, I'm seeing ghosts on the field against New England. Those are the kind of shit you can't do as an NFL quarterback.
Because you need a coach to – develop you to make sure you don't see ghosts. It's the same thing. Basically, with kids growing up, you have kids have parents, and parents will teach you rights and wrongs. Parents will teach you what to do in certain situations and what not to, and punish you when you don't do it right. You can't give a kid $10 million a year and say, here, and you're in New York, you have to come and throw footballs like once a day. Other than that, go have fun. You can have no regard for anything else in the world other than kissing random girls at nightclubs and getting drunk. You need someone to be a parent. You need a coach who's going to be a parent. I know I've been ranting about this a lot. You need a coach who's going to be a parent and step on your throat and be like, yo, let's get your act together, buddy. Like, we need, if the Jets want to be serious, at least. Those are just my thoughts.
But I mean, again, I kind of agree with that. I just didn't think – I didn't like Darnold that much out of college. I personally was – I'm a big Josh Allen fan because I just like people who can throw the ball far, and Josh Allen is just fun to watch. And I mean, again, he's the third best quarterback. So, probably
But again,
third.
Josh Allen is roughly the same age as Sam Darnold.
Well, they were the same draft class.
They're the same draft class. They're the same age. But because Allen has had a better progression, had a better coach, you need that. You don't need a buffer especially for quarterbacks. You need a way to be able to relax and someone to tell you what to do. And that's the hardest thing.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I need to go on a side tangent here because I'm kind of looking at the draft class for 2018 to see all the players. This is such an interesting draft class because, I mean, you have some really, really good players like Mayfield, Allen, Lamar Jackson, Minka Fitzpatrick, Leighton Van Der Esch, and then you have some really – or Calvin Ridley's in that draft class, too. Throw another position.
Calvin Ridley is one of the best wide receivers in the league.
And then you have some really, really bad players in that draft class, like my least favorite player, Sony Michel. You have – Mike Hughes picked right before him, and you have Rashawn Evans. Like, there's some big, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold.
Josh Rosen was in that. Who was the first quarterback taken in that class?
It was Mayfield. Mayfield went 1, Barkley went 2, Darnold went 3, Denzel Ward went 4.
Who went 2?
Barkley, Saquon Barkley.
Okay, I thought we were talking about quarterbacks, and my first thing that came up was
Matt
the
Barkley.
Former. Not Matt Barkley. Matt Barkley was an absolute bust. I hope he's having fun at the local Chick-fil-A.
I don't know. You said that's the only other Barkley I would have thought of.
I can't believe that's the first.
For NFL?
You can tell. Yeah, you can tell both my sisters went to USC because if Matt Barkley is the first name that comes to mind, oh boy, I have some other issues to deal with.
I mean, we haven't heard from Saquon in a while because he's been hurt, but yeah.
I mean, if we're talking about old quarterbacks doing well, how about Colt McCoy? Colt McCoy came out and absolutely – he was a game manager. He was the premier game manager. He was – wow. He was literally the – oh, my God. Who's the Redskins guy? Smith.
Alex Smith.
Colt McCoy was the Alex Smith of the New York Jets. He was perfect. He made very little mistakes. He just did his job, didn't need to score that much, and somehow the Giants defense, who is one of the, if not the worst defenses in the NFL, came out and said, okay, Like, okay. Let's just hold a defense. Let's hold an offense that scores 40 points a game to 12.
Hang on. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but okay. So I have the Monday Night Football game on in the background right now in case anything interesting came on in the background. And something interesting just came on in the background. It's an ad for a new series premiere of a TV show called The Chase with James Holzhauer, Ken Jennings, and then whoever that third guy was who sucked in the GOAT tournament, Brad, whatever. All three of them are going to be on another trivia show together, and I think it's hilarious.
I think also, like, as we're wrapping this episode up, we're going to have to do that pretty soon.
I do have one more comment I have to make about the NFL before we do that. Just something funny.
Say what you got to say, buddy.
Okay, so I was talking to my dad about the Jaguars and who their quarterback was. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Mike Glennon. He's been in the league forever. It's been like 10, 15 years.
Former NC State quarterback, yeah.
Mike Glennon's only been in the league 7 years. I feel like this dude has been in there since like 2005.
Jesus. He's not that old. Philip Rivers was the former shocking part to me.
I thought Glennon's been in the league as long as someone like Rivers, but he's only been in since 2013.
Jesus. All right. Well, on that note, as we kind of wrap up this episode, who's your if all those three guys aren't going to be Jeopardy hosts, who's your wannabe Jeopardy host?
I mean, realistically, I don't know. I would love to see someone like Joe Rogan do it. I think it'd be hilarious, but I don't think Joe Rogan's going to do it. I just don't think – I don't know who you can pick to fill Alex Trebek's shoes, honestly.
I almost think it cancels. I would love to see Mina Kimes do it. She's a ESPN reporter.
That's a good pick. That's a really good pick.
I love
actually.
Mina Kimes. I'm a big Mina Kimes guy. I tell all my family members that.
I don't want it to cancel just because I think it's a good show. It's kind of fun to watch sometimes.
You need someone who's smart and kind of sassy who can deliver a punchline when needed. And I believe it's either that or Neil deGrasse Tyson.
That's another good – well, so the reason I didn't go with some like image guy, and he's kind of old too. But so the thing is, there's two things I want to comment on. One, Ken Jennings is hosting a couple episodes. So I think it'll be interesting to see how a former player does as a host. I mean, Ken Jennings is smart and he knows the game, so he'll be comfortable on there. And two, I've read a couple other places that Trebek really wanted a woman to replace him.
Mina Kimes. I'm saying.
There's Mina Kimes. I don't know who they're going to pick. So it's going to be very tough to pick someone to replace him.
We got to end up here in a few seconds. Yeah, Doris Burke.
I thought about her. I just don't think she'd leave her job. Her job's fantastic with what she does.
Yeah, but I would want to be a game show host before an ESPN sideline reporter.
Both are great gigs, and I think she likes the NBA a lot. I think she
deserves more respect. Everybody loves her, but like let's get Doris Burke like and Mike Breen commentating a game. How fantastic would that be?
That would be very interesting to see.
I would love that.
All right, well, I think that's a good note to end on. We've been rambling on for a while.
This has been a kind of a long episode. We wanted to thank you guys again for listening to the return of the Drop a Deuce podcast. My name is Daniel Keenis. I am here with my co-host, Frank Todd. And Frank, any last words before we head out for a few days?
IU football to the playoff, baby.